You're listening to Hooked on Harness.
Esto va a llegar. Rion with the lead. Whiteside, presidential ball. Whiteside's coming on. Rion, Whiteside, the outside. Whiteside with the little brown chair.
Hello, good listener, and welcome to episode number 21 of Hooked on Harness. A highly non-typical episode here. Wherever you are listening to us in the world, you are probably in the same situation as us, which is effectively social distancing, doing most of your job and life out of your home if you can, and of course many of you can't. So very difficult times right now for a lot of people, not just in harness racing, but in society more generally. So trying to give you something to give you a bit of a distraction here. I'm joined by my very good friends on a very elaborate Skype system. Bern Tobin, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Adam. Just hanging in there, as I say. I've been lucky. I've been able to keep busy with my business. All I really need is a phone and a computer. The girls are great, but we're busy, but we're missing horse racing. We're missing sports in general.
Yeah, and what about yourself, Adam Keene? How are you hanging in there?
Yeah, weathering things all right on this end. It feels like just a giant rain delay in life with a lot of things that have changed quite dramatically just over a short period of time. But making it through, watching some old sports reruns, baseball, hockey, classic NHL from yesteryear, and got into a new TV show called Tiger King, which I'm sure a few of our listeners are familiar with.
It's funny, my wife and I were talking about that show over dinner tonight, and we were going to, as soon as we're done recording here, she and I will go watch the first episode of it. So you're about the fifth person to tell me that it's worth getting into, so might do that. Just want to be totally respectful of wherever you're listening. Just a very surreal experience over the last number of weeks. We're going to try and give ourselves a little bit of a distraction here with harness racing, but of course not minimizing what so many folks in the harness racing world and well beyond that are going through right now in terms of just financial hardship, people losing work in pretty much record numbers here in Canada over the last 2.5 weeks. Know a very similar situation in the U.S. right now. So take a load off, sit back, listen. Thank you for joining us. We're going to have a great episode here. So just to set it up, Bern had the wonderful experience of being able to interview Hall of Fame driver John Campbell, currently president of the Hamiltonian Society, by dollars, the winningest driver in harness racing history, with over $300 million in purse winnings over the course of his career. Only retired a couple of years ago, 11,000 races under his belt. So Bern had a great chat with him, talking about kind of a topic that we've visited often on this podcast, which is what are you looking for in a great horse? And also talking about the current challenge in front of the industry around dealing with COVID-19, some of the challenges there around staking payments and different approaches that might be considered. We're then going to take a bit of a break, but Bern will sing us out with Bern, you've written a number of harness racing songs on your little guitar over the years, and you'll take us out with a bit of a song to cheer us up called Locked in the Pocket. So sit back, enjoy, and don't forget, if you are listening to us and have been over the last little while, don't forget to like and subscribe. It really does make a difference in terms of helping other harness racing fans find the podcast. So sit tight and enjoy the episode. And we're back on Hooked on Harness. Maybe before we get to that John Campbell interview, let's just touch base real briefly on some of our horses. We might not go through the whole list here, but I've been getting the last little bit of live sports, if we want to call it that, even though it's not necessarily racing, is the two-year-old training videos that have been posted still with some reasonable regularity by the stable, and I actually was able to watch a set that just happened earlier today, actually, with a few of our horses. But Bern, why don't you just give the listeners a quick update on Beef and Cheddar, because this pacer has looked outstanding, especially today. But I know that's not the first time.
Yeah, Beef and Cheddar, a better than Cheddar colt raised by our friend Matt Chappell, is you know, ever since he showed up at the stable, oh, I guess back in October, has been, you know, shown some talent, and he was good again today. You know, everybody's going 218, 220, a long way to go, but he's got some step as well. That same set, our trotter, owned by the whole bunch of us, Walk on the Moon, the Archangel Colt, was in there, and he was hanging tough with the Pacers, and going a great mile, and you know, those are the top colts and horses that Anthony has. So it's great to see two of ours in the mix.
Yeah, and I think a good attitude on both of them, from what you can tell from just watching a video. Certainly, Beef and Cheddar seems to have a bit of an edge to him in terms of competitiveness. Early days still, as you say, but certainly everything's pointing in a good direction, so that's good. Adam Keene, over to you. Odds on Amethyst, what's the latest there?
Yeah, well, he was in to go just when the racing really shut down at Woodbine Mohawk Park. He's been sharp. He's been still training and getting his work in. I mean, I get pictures sent to me on Instagram every morning, and the horse has never looked sharper. So I think this time off, you know, he's full of energy, raring to go once we get back going.
Yeah, and let's hope that happens. Nobody knows, but let's hope that happens sooner than later for all of our sakes. Okay, so I'm going to tee that up in terms of you guys. Thanks for the updates, but I'd love it if, Bern, why don't we just cut to the interview that you had earlier today with John Campbell, and you guys can, you asked him some great questions about how do you know that you've got a great horse, and what are you looking for, and just getting some great perspective from someone who was involved in so many large, won a great number of stake races, and again, Hall of Fame driver, winningest driver in harness racing history, just in terms of purses, and just had some great perspective to share. So why don't we cut to that?
It is our great pleasure to welcome John Campbell to the show. Without a doubt, the greatest driver in harness racing history and a great ambassador for our sport. John, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're certainly living through challenging times. You're in New Jersey, and we hope your family is safe and healthy. I guess, you know, what's the view on the ground in New Jersey from where you sit?
Well, we were maybe ahead of some of the other parts of the country in social distancing and people staying home. So this has been our normal here for all going on 3 weeks. My two daughters live about 4 or 5 minutes from us, and we help out with our grandkids. So we've been going back and forth from their place, and that's about it, other than when Paula goes to the grocery store when needed. So it's, you know, it's obviously a big adjustment for everybody, but we've been, this has been our schedule here for going on 3 weeks.
Yeah, sounds similar like what my family's been up to. And as I say, we want everybody to stay healthy and stay safe. John, there's been a lot of discussion about what racing will look like in the months ahead, a lot of concerns about, you know, when we'll race again, financial implications, and the status of stakes races and stakes payments. But before we get there, I'm sure our listeners would love to have you share some of your racing experiences. And maybe I'll start there. You've won 6 Hamiltonians, 6 North American Cups, won the Meadowlands Pace 7 times, countless Breeders' Crowns. What's it like to win one of those big races?
Well, it's just what we strive for in these, you know, in the industry, is to get to that level. And I never ever took it for granted, even when I was just participating in those races. I knew it was special for me, and I was privileged just to be in those races. So I never took that for granted, lost sight of that. You know, I grew up starting out in, you know, one day meets in Ontario. So I was well aware of how fortunate I was through my whole career. And then when you get to win a race like that, it's obviously a great feeling of satisfaction. And it was always what I really never lost track of is it was always a new experience or a different experience for a lot of the connections involved. So it might have been my fourth Breeders' Crown or whatever, but that might have been the first time the connections were even competing in a Breeders' Crown. So the excitement that you got through the connections and the joy and just the satisfaction you got from that is, it's really difficult to describe, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, we all hope to live it one day. Hey, is there a favorite race for you and a favorite horse, maybe a greatest horse?
Greatest horse is easy. It's Mac Lobel. I knew when I was driving him just how special he was, and that was quite possibly a once in a lifetime experience. And when you look back at Mac Lobel, to me, the thing that made him great is he was a world champion 2-year-old, won the Breeders' Crown and everything. He did it too. Same thing at 3, set world records, Hambletonian, Breeders' Crown. Only 4-year-old ever to win the Elite Lop, which he was actually just a complete rock star in Sweden. The Swedish people just admired and had so much respect for Mac Lobel, and still do to this day. And then he came back and won the Elite Lop again at 6. And, with the schedule and pressure we put on our 2- and 3-year-olds for a horse to go on like that as an aged horse, it just, it's really mind-boggling when you think about it, because I think he's really the only horse that has ever had a career that long at that level.
Now, you've driven great horses and many expensive horses. But some modestly priced ones as well. I think of Hamiltonian winner Glidemaster, a $10,000 yearling. Real Desire, a $16,000 winner. $16,000 yearling. It's April, and we all have 2-year-olds, and many of them are looking great at 225, and the pace they're going right now. My question for you is, how do you know when you have a good horse or even a great horse?
The first time he gets tired. And people will tell you, I knew he was good all along, training down. I don't believe that. You can tell the ones that are bad.
Yeah.
The ones that don't travel as good, the ones that don't like their work or just, resent being asked to work a little harder. You can tell those horses, or if they just don't travel correctly. Those horses, all horsemen know them. The ones that just don't have as much future. The ones that are training good and going along, do everything you ask of them, yeah, you think they're good, but you don't know until they get racing, baby racing, and the first time they get tired, the next start, you'll find out just how that horse is going to respond to that, because some of them, I've seen them, when they trade down, baby race and whatever, and then they get their feelings hurt, as we like to say, and get a little tired.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them never go back to those first couple of baby races. They just they can't handle that being tired and don't want to work as hard. And so it's to me, it's impossible to tell until you get into competition and the horse has to do more work than they have ever done before and find out how they react to that.
So that was great, Bern, and I love the whole piece about you don't really know what you got until the horse has faced a bit of adversity, and how they actually respond to that adversity tells you a lot about what you've got. And even though our horses right now are doing what they should be doing at 220, you really don't know, other than knowing who the bad ones are. Beyond that, you really can't tell who's great and who's just average or maybe middling.
Yeah, I think John said, you can tell which ones are the bad ones now. But it's too early to tell the good ones. It's nice to see them going well, but they got a ways to go.
Yeah, that's good. And Adam Keene, you've got a really interesting story that actually involves John Campbell and your dad. Would you mind sharing that with the listeners?
Sure, yeah. It actually crosses a couple generations. And the connection is back in the mid to late 60s, my dad got into having some horses and training them on the side. And the first horse he ever bought was from John Campbell's dad. I think his name was Jack Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that my dad tells me is he went to go pick the horse up in London out of their barn. And there was John and John's younger brother, who's also actually a pretty accomplished trainer.
Jim. Yep.
And as they were taking the horse out, my dad had purchased John, and his brother were in the tack room in tears. I guess they become so attached to this horse, and just the thought of selling, you know, their pet was an introduction to them of that part of the business. So that's a story that my dad, who's now since passed away, told me a couple of times, and even brought it up again with John a few years ago when he was up at Mohawk for some big races, and he still remembers it to this day, some 50 years later.
Unbelievable. How old do you think John would have been at that point?
I think John might have been, I want to say maybe 10, 12, something like that. Before he was, you know, certainly before he was driving, he was still just a kid at that point.
And before the super cool mustache, I think I got to point out too. So anyways, no, listen, that's amazing. What a great story. Amazing memory there, Adam. Bern, you then switched into a different conversation with John, more specifically around staking payments for the Breeders' Crown. Of course, there is a maintenance payment or a sustaining payment that is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And you asked him some more difficult questions, I think, about what the approach is there, what the rationale is, and what some of the stakeholders are that John's trying to kind of walk a fine line there, along with the entire Hamiltonian society. So why don't we cut to that?
John, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your new role, president of the Hamiltonian Society. Tell us about the Hamiltonian Society, its mission and objectives. Obviously, the driving force behind big races like the Hamiltonian and the Breeders' Crown.
Well, our mandate, you know, states that we're to support the breeding and racing of the standard bred horse, and obviously, stakes are a big part of that. And I don't think anything supports the breeding industry more than stakes, whether it be sire stakes or stakes on the Grand Circuit. So that's our mandate, and that's, you know, we're always conscious of that in decisions that we make. And, you know, the board, you know, it has a big presence from breeders on the board. There's no question about that, but it's not specifically all breeders either. So I think we have a good cross-section of opinions on our board, and I certainly respect, you know, what the board brings to the table every time we have a meeting.
Now, John, stakes races makes dreamers of us all. I guess the reality is COVID-19 is a huge test for all us dreamers. Purses for stake races depend on stake payments, monthly payments made by owners, primarily during winter and spring months. At this time, I think many would agree that making stake payments for racehorses is many would consider not essential, an essential need, and an expense for many owners who maybe experience financial challenge from the impacts of COVID-19. Regional stake programs have modified some stake payments to reflect that reality, and we've recently heard that the Woodbine Entertainment Group has eliminated its April payments. The Hamiltonian Society has not reduced or modified its stakes program payment schedule, and there's been much industry focus and concern, discussion, for this situation since recently is effectively shut down. John, can you share, I guess, some thoughts or the thought process here, you know, on why payments, specifically that April 15 payment, hasn't been modified at this point?
Well, we did have our winter meeting March 22nd, and obviously by teleconference with the Hamiltonian Society Board. We had, I'm happy to say, 100% attendance, too. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, everybody was very interested in the meeting. We discussed, you know, options, and the one thing you have to remember, like if you're eliminating a sustaining payment for a sire stake program, it has very little impact on the money that those horses will race for come summertime, mm-hmm. because that money is usually set aside by the provincial body for the sire stakes, and the money that's paid in does not have a huge impact on what they would race for. Now, and one thing I want to clarify, the only stake that the Hamiltonian Society really controls for the April 15th payments is the Breeders' Crown.
Right.
We do administer stakes for other racetracks, and I will say that I reached out to all the other tracks and ask their intentions on the April 15th payment. And the tracks that we were involved with felt that they would like to keep it intact and move forward with the April 15th payment. So the Breeders' Crown is very dependent on who pays in and how much pays in, and that's what's made it a success. Now, one thing that we also do, for the Breeders' Crown program, we take money from the stallion owners to fund the program. Mm-hmm. So every to be eligible for the Breeders' Crown, you have to pay X amount of dollars from your stallion to be eligible. And then, so we have an obligation to that stallion owner to put the Breeders' Crown on with a purse of what's expected and this prestige that goes with that purse. Mm-hmm. We also have an obligation to the breeder who nominated that horse as a yearling because he nominated it with the same expectations. The other entity that we have is the host track. And once we sign a contract with our host track, which in 2020 is Hoosier, the conditions cannot be changed unless by mutual consent. So we do have those obligations with all those three entities, and I wouldn't expect a problem from the stallion owners or the yearling nominators. And I have to say that the Hoosier management, Rick Moore and his team, have just been excellent to deal with. And any discussions that we would have over the contract would be agreed upon amicably, I'm sure. I'm not saying that we would be sued. It's not impossible that we would be sued. I think it would be unlikely. But we do have those obligations to think about. So when we had our meeting, we discussed the alternatives or other options. And the board basically decided that still the best option we have to try and present the Breeders' Crown in the fashion and with the prestige that it is expected was to leave this April 15th payment intact. Now, I know people will say that they'd like to raise for more money, and I certainly understand that. But in all reality, our payments are going to be down in April. There's no doubt about that, just because of everything that's going on. And I certainly can't imagine that the financial hardship that a lot of people have right now. It's unprecedented times in the world, not just in harness racing. So that's what the board's decision was. I agree with it. I'm not hiding behind my board in any way, just because I didn't believe the other options were any better than what staying with the April 15th payment was.
Some of those options, I guess, obviously, and, you know, not that we're going to go through them individually, but everything from, you know, doubling up a later payment, increasing the starting fees, you know, canceling a payment, you know, reducing a payment, all those things were put on the table?
Yes, absolutely. They were discussed. And if you up the starting fee, that, you know, that makes sense, but your pool of purse money would be much different than it is when you're taking smaller payments all through February, March, April, and May. There's the pool of horses by the time you get ready to start is just so much smaller.
Yeah.
So that really, you know, you would never generate the purse doing it that way.
Yeah.
Deferring payments, that really puts us in a bind for people that would not honor their obligations because we have no authority, you know, to suspend anybody, and, you know, that puts us in a position where there's a good chance we're going to be chasing money over two countries, possibly three continents, and I think that would still be a very small segment because I happen to believe most people are honorable, but there would be some people that wouldn't honor those obligations. To me, the only options are doing what Woodbine did, eliminate the payment, or go ahead with it as scheduled. That was, to me, the two best options. And in all honesty, the amount of money that comes in April is a big portion of what goes into those purses for Breeders' Crown in October.
Yeah. John, I just wanted to ask about prestige and whether prestige and money are the same thing. Because for me, for example, and a lot of people I've talked to said, hey, we want to win the Hamiltonian. We want to win a Breeders' Crown. And if it's for $300,000 or $500,000, it doesn't really matter at that level. If it takes reduced payments to keep more people involved, keep everything intact, I'm happy for 1 year to race for $300,000 because I want to win the Breeders' Crown. I want the prestige. And 2021, we will go back to normal. And this fall, please God, we all should be able to show up and continue to buy yearlings and, to chase that dream in 2021. What about, reducing the amount of the purse? Those thoughts.
Well, as I said, there's going to be less money in that purse already. Just because we know that our payments are going to be down come April and May. The board was not willing to reduce those payments as of now, and I will say that I am in constant contact with our board members, and obviously this is discussed each and every time I do talk to them, and it's not that the decision could be changed before April 15th, because those talks are ongoing, but that's what was decided by the board on March 22nd. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the conversations are fluid and constant.
Yeah, I mean, the people I've talked to and said, hey, now is the time. If there ever was a year to get people engaged and keep them engaged in that chase of the Hamiltonian and the Breeders' Crown, now would be the year. It'll be a great leadership direction from the Hamiltonian Society. And as I say, going back to the fact that it gives people hope without having that added expense, and again maintains the integrity of the events. At least from maybe the purses are lower, but it just provide a beacon for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I can see that side of the argument. However, that I can see a certain segment of that people. It would be small. It would be small that if we showed up going for $375,000 instead of $600,000 in the two-year-old races, there would be complaints that the Breeders' Crown is not going for enough as well. Mm. Now, that would be a small segment, but it would come up.
And you think, obviously, John, this is a very fluid situation. Flexibility. I mean, we're everything. The world is changing day to day, as you know. But obviously, you're going to continue to have some conversations leading up to the April 15th deadline. And, I'm not saying anything will change, but I would imagine you folks are your door is wide open to ideas and maybe where you might go with things.
Yes, and we've actually got a couple of new proposals that we hadn't heard before. And obviously, we're going to have those discussions today and tomorrow with, in-house and with board members. So, actually, it's kind of refreshing to get a couple of new proposals that to bounce off people. And not only our directors, but other tracks that are taking payments at the same time in April. As I said, this is fluid, it's ongoing, and it was kind of refreshing to have a couple of different proposals to evaluate and get other people's opinions on.
Yeah. Hey, can you share some of that with us, or is that something we might hear about in the days ahead?
Well, if it comes to fruition, you'll hear about it in the days ahead. No, I don't want to put anything out there now because it'll spread like crazy that what's going to happen, and that's not the case as of this minute.
No, for sure, for sure. John, as I say, from all the listeners Hooked on Harness, we want to thank you. As I say, many of us have watched you through your career, cheered you on, and I believe I mentioned to you before we chatted, you have driven a couple of horses for me over the years, so I appreciate that, and we look forward to getting back to the races, getting to the Hamiltonian, to the Breeders' Crown, and as I say, hopefully we'll all get through this, and we'll see you at the racetrack.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure to be on, and everybody out there, be safe, be careful, and listen to the guidelines.
know, there was a lot packed into that last section, last segment, guys, and I can't even begin to tell you how close the parallels are with, you know, all of our day jobs. Like, all three of us make our day jobs outside of harness racing, and what we've all had to deal with over the last 2-3 weeks, some pretty unprecedented stuff in terms of ways of working, trying to find solutions to problems that you didn't have 3 weeks ago. And in some respect, kind of hearing everything that John put on the table there around, you know, the different stakeholders that he needs to try and keep happy. Like, he's really walking a tightrope to try and find a middle ground there that makes all the stakeholders feel like they've been given a fair shake in this. I don't know, Adam, listening to it, what was your takeaway?
I mean, that certainly was one, Adam, if you think about just how complex it's got to be to sort out this situation when you consider you've got the breeders involved, you've got the people that have that now own these horses, the tracks that they have to work with, the different jurisdictions. So it's definitely a jigsaw puzzle with a lot more pieces probably than I thought it had even prior to this really popping up as an issue. And the other thing I thought about with his comments and to yours as well, like if you think about what's happening in sports and entertainment, and all the other facets of society right now with things being canceled, that who would have ever thought that the Masters, you know, the Kentucky Derby, Wimbledon, all of these sort of marquee, you know, they're on a certain pedestal. And now we're facing that with horse racing in Canada, with just the Queen's Plate announcing today that they're going to be pushed back. So things are moving in that direction. You know, things that we would not have ever anticipated even a couple of weeks ago are playing out relatively wildly.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a very fluid situation. I think the other piece at the end is it sounds like they are looking at some other alternative plans or arrangements, which is encouraging, but definitely not an easy one.
Yeah, and I think I think he does leave it on a bit of a hopeful note there. So let's hope that some of those new potential solutions, I mean, it is an opportunity to innovate, although under some pretty difficult circumstances, but it is an opportunity to try and find something a little bit different. Anyone listening to this podcast, just think about your own day job. If you work or live outside of the harness racing world, the amount of flexibility that you've probably had to demonstrate over the last 3 weeks, and I think every industry is coming at that at a slightly different angle with different constraints on them. So hopefully that tone that he sent at the end, that maybe there is something there, maybe the last shoe hasn't dropped on this. But Bern, great interview, and thanks for doing that. I think you got some excellent information there and just good perspective overall. We're going to close this episode off. Bern, why don't you give us a little bit of a few words on your song Locked in the Pocket, because I think John probably found himself, maybe not too often as a good driver, maybe the odd time John did find himself locked in the pocket. I just kind of think that term for where we sit right now at the beginning of April, lots of us are kind of locked in the pocket in terms of our lives and social distancing and all this flattening the curve kind of stuff that everyone's been talking about for the last number of weeks.
Yeah, you know, the term basically is, you know, for people in the horse racing business, knowing you're stuck in second place there behind the horse, and you got horses outside of you, and you know, you got nowhere to go. I got home here the last 2 weeks or so and broke out my guitar because, you know, I didn't have any horse racing to watch. I started leafing through some songs, and I found all these songs that I wrote years and years ago. I sat down and recorded Locked in the Pocket for everybody. And I think it's an appropriate way to play us out.
That's fantastic, Bern. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And, of course, you can email us at hookedonharness@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. And here's Bern Tobin playing his own harness racing song, Locked in the Pocket. Be well and be safe, everyone, and all the best.
Trainer passed me the lines, said send him down the road, he's feeling fine. Then I scored him down, he grabbed the bit and he pulled me all around. So we left the gate in a hurry, I landed in the two-hole sitting pretty. But we're riding behind a 20-to-1 shot, a damn thing stopped and left me in a spot. Now I'm locked in the pocket. If I could get out, I'd fly like a rocket. But I sat too long. Now the favorite and the money's long gone. I should have caught a pole, headed to the lead, but my feet got cold. Then my horse locked on a line. He was running in, we were losing time. Clock flashed up 55 and 2. They were coming first up, what was I to do? Gotta hope for some luck, but for now, I'm stuck. I'm locked in the pocket. If I could get out, I'd fly like a rocket, but I sat too long. Now the favorite and the money's long gone. Took a big time shuffle, so deep now might need me a shovel. If I could only pull the right line, might get to the wire just in time. I keep looking for a hole. If I could get out, he'd really rock and roll. But I ran out of racetrack and didn't get a check, finished 10 lengths back. I got locked in the pocket. If I could get out, I'd fly like a rocket, but I sat too long. Now the favorite and the money's long gone. I got locked in the pocket. If I could get out, I'd fly like a rocket, but I sat too long. And all I got left is this goddamn song.